Hello, this is Benjamin Boyce, and welcome to Quarantine Conversations. Today's guest is Mackenzie, who recently began speaking about her detransition process on the YouTube. And I found her on the YouTube, and I invited her onto my YouTube, which is streamed in various other locations, such as Library and ThinkSpot, and my podcast, The Voice of Reason, which can be found on iTunes and other podcast platforms. So I had Mackenzie on, and she speaks about her process going through gender dysphoria as a, you know, a preteen and a teen, and then deciding that she was non-binary, and then that she wanted to be a trans man, and then that she didn't want to go down that path anymore. And we explore her process of transition, and we explore what it's like for her now, being connected with her body and coping with her body in new and undiscovered ways. This is a part of a series on gender, sexuality, and transition, but it's also just part of a series of human beings speaking to one another, because that is what I'm trying to do here. Not that I'm succeeding, but that's what I'm working toward. That is my goal. This is Benjamin Boyce, and I'd like to introduce you to Mackenzie.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. How's your lockdown?
It's interesting. All my classes are on Zoom now, and in my video class last week, we put on face masks during class. So that was cool.
Wait, is it a class about video making?
Yeah, it's like video production.
All right. Is that what you're getting into, or is it just an elective?
My major is called kinetic imaging, which is just like digital media production. So there's like three sort of main components. So it's like video editing, animation, and then sound design.
Okay.
So it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I saw your Tool-esque stop motion.
Yeah, yeah.
Your little phallus thing that's running through a dirty sewer or something.
Yeah.
Nice and disturbing.
I like over there.
Are you doing any big projects yet? Movies, shorts, video, music videos?
We're doing a lot of like little things. And now, I guess the funny thing is now that nobody has access to the equipment, so they can't technically make us do stuff.
Okay, yeah.
So it's like, they're just kind of like, do whatever you can, and that's good enough.
Okay. So a lot of smartphone videos then.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a particularly interesting challenge. How do you do a group project over, like, with social distancing going on?
Yeah, I mean, they're not having us do group work, so yeah. I'm not complaining about that.
Do you feel like you're getting a bum deal by having to go online? Are you missing out on your education, you feel?
Yeah, I'm trying to be like not complain about it, I guess, because I'm comparatively very lucky. But I did have my first 3D class this semester, which I'd really been working on or like looking forward to, because I'd been working on learning 3D, but it's hard to do, I guess, on my own with no structure. And I was making a lot of progress, and now I don't have access to the software anymore.
Oh, so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And 3D would be CGI stuff, right? Like Blender or...
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Huh. That's an interesting challenge. I wonder if the schools can leverage some of their power to get the software companies to, you know, do like a weird loan trial software to get it into your guys' hands.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting idea. I know for me, part of it's just because like one of the programs won't run on my laptop, but like that's... I might send that suggestion to my administrators. Thank you.
No, you should.
That's a good idea.
You should get, they're there for you, or at least that's what they're saying.
While they're allegedly.
Pocketing all your loan money.
Yeah.
What year are you, if you mind me asking?
I'm technically a sophomore. It's kind of weird because I had like dropped out halfway through spring semester of last year, but now I'm back. So technically, for like credits purposes, I'm a sophomore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you take a gap year, or did you kind of just skip from high school to college?
Well, because I got most of the way through my sophomore year last year, but then I had like a mental breakdown, so I had to take a little while off.
Yeah.
Better now.
Good. When did you start doing the YouTube thing?
Well, this stuff that's public now, I think, was in January. I had been doing videos for a few months before that, but they're all private now because they were just about different other stuff. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a few months.
And why did you start going public with this stuff? What was the impetus?
I guess it was just sort of like I felt, because first of all, I didn't know that that video was going to get that many views. I was open to the possibility. I didn't actually think it was going to happen. It was mainly just so that I could make that, put all of my thoughts and feelings and stuff into that video, and then share that with people that hypothetically knew me or whatever, or like had met me, and just be like, here's the situation if you care, right? And it was just kind of that, or like, if other people are going through the same thing, maybe they'll find this video and that would be cool. But yeah, I wasn't really expecting all of that.
That is weird. It was biographical then. It was just about your personal experience, and then it just resonated with the algorithm and with the viewers.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people, I think like the detransition topic is kind of big right now, I guess, that people are like, oh, this is happening. And, you know, people, I think, with all different sorts of political backgrounds and stuff and different opinions, they have different reasons for being interested in it. So it's sort of, it was like a bunch of different kinds of people were probably attracted to it.
Interesting. You probably saw them represented in your comment field.
Yeah. I try not to read the comments, but I still do. Don't know why.
You kind of have to be kind of responsible and yet like hermetically seal yourself from personal attacks. But
yeah.
It's a good source of feedback.
Definitely.
And so do you feel that detrans, just as a category or as something that could be used for different ends, for different narratives, what is like some narratives that you're worried about being the detrans story might be used for?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot, because obviously there are a lot of people that I think are seeing this and just going, oh, all trans people are terrible. They're destroying the children. And I'm like, I don't know about that. a lot of it, you know, is people that I don't want to like generalize anyone, but from what I've seen, people that sort of believe in really strict gender roles and stuff like that, and are like telling me to go back to being like super feminine and stuff like that, which I never even was in the first place. And people that just generally don't like people breaking the status quo in any way. And I don't really like that. I don't really vibe with anybody that's directly like hateful or anything like that. And I actually didn't see as much of that stuff as I expected to. I think most people were genuinely just sort of curious. So that was refreshing. I was expecting it to be worse.
Hmm. Do you want to get into your arc a little bit? Like, do you mind if I ask you, like, when your dysphoria, when you first started noticing it?
Yeah, well, so it got really bad, I think, when I was, like, it was when I went into puberty that it got really bad. Because before that, I had sort of, I guess I wouldn't say it was, like, dysphoria before that point, but it was, like, I guess I was always kind of a tomboyish kid, and I was noticing, like, ways that boys and girls were treated differently and stuff like that, and I was dissatisfied, I guess, with being a girl. So there were, like, roots from when I was a kid, but then when I went into puberty, it became really intense, I guess, and it just sort of stayed that way.
Okay.
I guess, in retrospect, like, I wonder if I hadn't sort of found that narrative and I hadn't thought that that was what was going on with me, or like that I needed to transition, I wonder if it would have gone away faster, because I do feel like the fact that I focused on it more and like identified with it further sort of made it worse in some ways. I didn't know that at the time, but like in retrospect, I think that happened. Yeah.
Around
12, 13.
Was your body like betraying you? Was it doing things that you didn't want it to? Or what was that?
Yeah.
What's that like? I mean, the puberty sucks.
But yeah,
like female puberty is especially acute because there's some pretty big changes that happen. And like, how do you navigate like that relationship with the body that's so rapidly changing?
It was just kind of like that before that point, my body, I didn't really think of it that much because it wasn't really different than anybody else's body at my age and stuff like that. So it was not something I ever thought about that much before. And then when puberty happened, all of a sudden it was like there were a bunch of sort of outside connotations almost to the things that were happening in my body. And I didn't, again, like at the time, I didn't realize that that's part of why I was so scared as well. But it was also just like, it felt like my body wasn't mine anymore. Like the thing you said, that it was doing things almost without my permission or that I didn't want it to do. And so I just felt, it felt like my body was like a separate entity to me. And it literally got to the point, because I was really freaked out over it, where like, I was viewing it as something completely separate from myself, from my actual like consciousness, which I guess sounds strange, but it was like, I didn't want to like feel any bodily sensations and stuff like that. So I literally would like, not on purpose, I guess, but like sort of mute feelings of things, I guess, and just like sensations, and just not like purposefully almost not register them. But I guess just because I was so scared and uncomfortable. Yeah, it's hard to explain, I guess, but that's sort of the best I can do.
There's a, you mentioned a social component too. Was like your body started getting different attention to, and people started paying attention to you in a way that didn't align with how you wanted to be paid attention to or treated?
I mean, it was almost like, because that's the thing, is that, because I didn't for a long time think that this was a factor, because people didn't treat me super differently. Like, obviously, there were some boys at school that were like shitheads. Am I allowed to say shit?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, sorry. yeah, and so that was a thing, but I guess that didn't start, like, that started sort of after the initial distress, but I think what happened was that I, you know, had been taking in information for my whole life, and I could tell the way that, like, female bodies were sexualized and stuff like that, that I really did not want that kind of attention, and I didn't want to be associated with that stuff. And it was really, I guess, scary to just be like, wait, I don't have any choice.
What do you mean you don't have any choice?
Like, it's just people are going to look at me whatever way they're going to look at me, and I can't do anything about it.
You said that you were dissociating from sensations. Were you also dissociating from society, too? Did you kind of withdraw, or how did your personality, how did you manage your intellectual life?
yeah, well, because I'd always kind of been like a shy kid, but definitely I started sort of not talking very much anymore. I hadn't originally anyway, but this, it sort of got worse. And I would just, I felt very cut off from other people. And so it was sort of just, I would go to school, I would try and just do my work and stuff like that. I focused a lot just on school because it was a good distraction from everything else. And I had friends, but I would just sort of go home and then not talk to anyone, partially because I lived really far away, so I couldn't really feasibly see friends, but also because I didn't want to, I didn't have the energy almost to continue interacting with people that much, because it was like just really stressful just to be around people.
How was the internet? Was the internet there to be your social network?
Sure was. Yep. and it was funny, like, my parents did a relatively good job, I think, of trying to sway me away. I think my internet turned off at around, it was either 10 or 11 every night, so I wasn't on it, like, after that hour. And they did, for a while, like, try to sort of monitor my usage, but I guess it was just sort of like after a certain point I had my own freedom, and it was just like humans, you know, especially like teenagers are rough to be around, and like it was significantly easier to just be like, yo, I can like actually finally be around people that are somewhat interested in what I'm interested in and stuff like that, because I never had that before. I remember in like fifth grade crying to my teacher because I was like, I don't feel like I fit in with any of these other kids and stuff like that. And so it was like the internet was a very appealing place for a kid that like you don't feel like you fit in with other people around you.
And so you find people that are interested in the same things. What were some of the things that you were interested in during your times?
I was really interested in like Nintendo games. I really liked The Legend of Zelda. Okay. So I would always go on like, when I got Tumblr and stuff like that, it was basically just video games and then music that I liked, because I was also really into bands. I really liked My Chemical Romance, like a lot of people did at that point. I really liked a bunch of other bands that, like, none of the kids at my school liked yet, or at least not the kids I was friends with. But I was, like, really obsessed with them, and it was, like, the main thing that I cared about at that point. So you could just go on the internet, and it's like, oh, other people are talking about this stuff that I really care about. So, yeah, mainly that stuff.
And did your... It seems like you said that you discovered gender dysphoria as a concept, and maybe transition as a concept. Was it through online research on
it? Was Instagram, yeah.
Oh, Instagram, okay.
Yeah, there was surprisingly not Tumblr, right?
yeah, this is an anomaly.
Yeah, it was by a My Chemical Romance fan who was a trans guy, and it was a little bit after I had started, like, feeling really uncomfortable in my body and had started sort of independently thinking, like, I really don't want to be a girl. I wish I was born a guy, stuff like that. But I didn't, I guess, give a whole lot of weight to it because it seemed like not something that was possible at the time, like not something I knew about as like a concept. But then I came across him and I was like, that's something that exists. Like, I can do that. And that's what's going on with me, I thought. Like, because it matched up, his experience matched up so well with how I was feeling. And so I definitely, like, latched onto that, I think, as, like, this is what's up with me. This is why I'm so distressed. Because from my perspective at the time, at least, you know, now looking back, like, I can see how other people were probably going through very similar things. I just couldn't see it at the time. But, like, it felt like I was the only person around me that was experiencing that amount of distress over, like, gender and sex. Because nobody else seemed to talk about it. Everybody else seemed to be fine. And I don't know if they were just quiet about it, but it was like that was the only person. And then after that, like, the only people that were actually talking about that and that seemed to understand why I was so upset.
Oh, okay. And was there, like, a middle ground that you entered into first, like a non-binary identity? Or did you start getting into that side of the conversation?
It was kind of for a while where I was just like, okay, whatever it is, I'm not a girl, right? I have that carved into my leg from when I was like 14. I was very confident about that at the time. So yeah, I think my timeline for this is all messed up because I really honestly blocked a lot of this out. But I did identify as non-binary for a few years, then a trans man for a few years. And I was just sort of like, I guess it was less that I felt different, but more that just I was using different words. Because it was just sort of figuring out where I felt comfortable at the time. And then eventually I went back to identifying as non-binary in college. So it was just sort of like non-binary, trans man, non-binary again.
Was it helpful when you started being non-binary? Was it helpful when you identified as a man? And how did it help you?
It was. And it's super weird because it literally did feel like just putting that sort of layer of language and, like, conceptual reality over myself. Like, that, it removed me from the reality of girlhood and the reality of womanhood. To an extent, obviously, like, it didn't physically at that point relieve any of my, like, body stress, but it sort of, I guess, almost provided relief in a way.
Do you think that you, like, tried to become a different person, or were you just the same person, just conceptualized differently, or like, plugged into the world differently on a mental level?
I think it was, like, I almost saw it as like a pass to be able to be myself, which sounds kind of weird. Like, cause I was still I would say I was pretty repressed in general for that whole period of time. But it was almost like before I was identifying as non-binary, it was almost like I cared way too much about sort of what I was supposed to be. In some ways rebelling against that because I recognized that, like, I didn't like gender stereotypes and stuff like that. And I thought they were dumb. And I was like, people should just be free to be themselves. But there was that layer of fear and anxiety over top of it that when I identified as non-binary, it was almost like freeing in a way, which like, in retrospect, it's, like, kind of messed up, but it's, I mean, that's how it was at the time, I guess.
Why do you think it's messed up? What's weird about it, looking at it now?
I guess it's just that, like, why couldn't I have felt okay being myself, like, not identifying as non-binary, like, as a woman? Mm-hmm. Like, why did that have to change anything about me? Anything about how I presented myself? Anything about the standards that I applied to myself? Anything like that? Like, it hypothetically, at least from my opinion now of myself, it shouldn't have needed to change anything, but it's almost like it was this mental stepping stone at the time.
Or like almost a rite of passage of claiming yourself, like of being in control of.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And then when you went from non-binary to being a trans man, how did that change your feelings about yourself and the world?
I guess it didn't super change how I, it wasn't a huge change. It was just kind of that I was like thinking, you know, it doesn't really make sense that I would like to have a male body and stuff like that. Like that I wish I was born male and yet I'm calling myself non-binary. So it was almost sort of like, I guess a logical thing to me that I was like, this seems to be the more correct label, right? That seemed to be more accurate at the time. Because I guess non-binary at that point had just been like the first step, like, okay, I'm not a girl. Here's this. Here's this like placeholder almost. Here's what I'm not, right? It was like an anti-identity almost. Because I called myself agender for a while too, which I guess was like the same thing, just like I'm not a girl at least. So here's this.
And what percentage of your identity or your life was focused on, like, the internet identity as opposed to you going to school and saying, this is my pronoun, or talking to your friends and your cohorts and in real life? Like, how much of that, what's the proportion of those two?
I think it would probably honestly have been, like, 50-50 because I didn't really bring that side of things. They weren't really very connected. I had a few people at school in high school that knew. One of them was the girl I dated, and then there were like a couple other people that knew that were like my close friends. But other than that, like I'm from a relatively conservative area, and so it was just sort of like a strategic thing that I was like, probably best to keep quiet about this. So yeah, it was just sort of, they were very separate, and it was just sort of, when I was at school, I was just doing my thing as this person. And then when I went home, I was like, I feel better almost because I was just alone. Like, I would just hold myself up in my room when I got home, or just like go out into the woods and then just sit out there for like hours. So it was like, I wasn't getting a lot of human interaction outside of school.
And it sounds like these steps were of your own volition.
Yes.
Was it molded by the internet? Did the community on the internet kind of take you up into itself, or did you just see what other people were doing and kind of select what you wanted from that?
It was mainly the second thing, because I wasn't very like actually active in communities. I just sort of observed most of the time. So nobody really knew who I was. I didn't really interact with people. It was just kind of that I was searching for a solution to what was going on with me, and that was what I found. So I was just like observing people.
Did you get any counseling or anybody who understood this stuff that could talk to you, like a gender therapist or something like that?
Understood this stuff is an interesting thing. So when I was, I think it was from when I was 15 through 17, I did have a therapist. And sort of the extent that we went with talking about this stuff, because she I think correctly identified that my problems were probably rooted in other things, like not feeling like I belonged and stuff like that. But because of course at that point I believed that all the other, like at least a lot of the other distress I was feeling was because I was trans. She said that she had, I think, like a lesbian family member or something like that that felt the way that I was describing. And I can remember at the time that I was just sort of like, okay, like, why is, like, because the narrative that I'd gotten, right, I didn't know anything about that lesbians and gay people do often experience gender dysphoria. I didn't know that. It was sort of that narrative of like, if you experience gender dysphoria, it means you're some flavor of trans or whatever, and there's not really other, you know, people didn't really talk about anything else. And also that, like, gender identity and sexuality are completely separate, not at all related. And it's like, that's true in some ways, but also, like, for a lot of people that I have heard of, like, you know, your sexuality can impact your relationship with gender. So it didn't make sense to me at the time, because I sort of wasn't, I wasn't familiar with why that would make sense. So I was like, okay, this is kind of irrelevant. And also, like, I wasn't sure of my sexuality at the time, but I was like, well, I don't think I'm a lesbian, so this is not relevant to me at all.
Was basically. There resistance to being, seeing yourself as a lesbian?
I think it was like, that's hard to answer because I still haven't figured that out. So probably, yeah. I think to some extent, because I assumed, I've always assumed that I was attracted to males. And I haven't confirmed nor falsified that yet. So, yeah, I guess I was just sort of like, because I guess it would have meant that I was a girl. And I was like, I'm very firmly don't feel like a girl.
Okay.
So I think that was the main thing. But I also feel like there was probably other stuff involved. But at the same time, like, I, because the internalized homophobia thing is like an interesting topic for me, because I have two great uncles who are gay. Only one of them is still alive, but two great uncles who are gay, and then one lesbian cousin. And I, you know, so my whole family always had been very accepting of that kind of thing. Okay. And so I never experienced any homophobia in, like, in the home or anything like that. But again, I was in that, like, conservative town area where it was pretty much normal up until, like, some part of high school for teachers to just sometimes make homophobic jokes. And so I do, like, it's probable that I internalized that. Like, I think that just, you know, might have happened. And that does concern me, and that's something that I'm, like, still trying to figure out.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound from what you're saying that that was like a prime cause of you wanting to not be a woman, because you were attracted to, you might be attracted to women. Did your dysphoria ebb when you went into trans manness?
Sort of. It was like a certain amount of it did, because most of it didn't. Most of it just stayed the same, because it was like situational and like based on how people were interpreting me and stuff like that, and based on how my body was. But there was this amount of like sort of satisfaction almost from feeling like I had figured out what I was going through, that it was almost like I have this path now.
Okay.
That it's not like, oh, I just feel like crap and I don't know why and I don't know what to do about it. It was like, I think I know what's going on, and I think I know what to do to hopefully make myself feel better. So it was like I had a goal.
Did that, but then you started backing out of that. So what was it about that that was no longer panning out, or what was it about that you decided, oh, maybe this isn't the solution?
I think part of it, because a lot of this just gets into how, maybe I just don't understand, you know, maybe this is an issue of mine, but there seem to be a lot of like contradictions in the way that gender identity is talked about and the way that people sort of conceptualize of it. And I don't know, maybe again, that's just a me thing. But I knew that at a certain point that I didn't want to be like a manly man, I guess. I knew that I wanted to be male, but I didn't want to be, I guess, and it was the kind of thing where I wanted a male body, but I was also, it's so confusing. There's a lot of stuff where people were talking about how, you know, divorced your gender identity can be from like your physical dysphoria and stuff like that, and sort of how there's all these different components. And I guess it just became where like people, it was almost like people would sort of treat me as like, hey, bro, you know, like when I told them I was a trans man and stuff, and almost, I guess maybe they were overcompensating.
Yeah.
But it was like, I was like, I don't want this social role,
okay.
I guess. Like, I wanted to be interpreted as a male, but I didn't want, I guess, that sort of stereotypical male social role imposed upon me either. Like, I just didn't want to be subjected to anything. And in retrospect, like, that seems like just a normal thing, but I was like very much distressed about it. And I guess my body insecurity is kind of played into that. It's honestly very confusing in retrospect. And I'm like, I don't even understand how I felt at the time, honestly, because it was so like convoluted. Yeah. That's so basically the best I can explain that.
Was it then going into being non-binary again? Was that a way to say, okay, this is a little too confusing, let's just back out of that stage of things?
Almost, yeah. It was like, I felt like I had something to live up to, in a way, if I was calling myself a trans man. And then with non-binary, it's like, okay, this is this middle ground that pretty much I can shape into what I want, in a way.
Okay. So it was freeing again, or like there's less pressure?
Yeah.
And then at the end of that was becoming a woman again, or at least being okay with being a woman, or making peace with woman identity?
So I have a video that I've just filmed that's coming out on Saturday, which I guess for anybody watching this back is going to be April the 4th. About the event that caused me to realize that I had a detransition, which was that I had like an ego death over last summer. Yeah. And so it was very sudden. And I guess something sort of weird that I'm still dealing with is that I don't feel comfortable being called a woman. I don't feel comfortable necessarily with my body or like the sort of woman social role, I guess. But I've sort of changed my relationship to those concepts and stuff like that. And it's almost like when I had that experience, my way of relating to my own feelings about it changed. So it was sort of like, yeah, I'm feeling this discomfort, but I recognize that it's not innate. And sort of that if I change the way that I feel about it and sort of the way that I feel about myself, then that actually makes it a lot easier to deal with.
Wow. There's so much, what you're expressing throughout this discussion is the power that conceptualizing things has for you. Like just when you just shift language, it changes how your feelings are.
Mm-hmm. It is so like, because I think something that we don't think about a lot is how much context and connotation there are to a lot of words. And I guess just a lot of concepts and sort of archetypes almost that I think really are largely unconscious in a lot of ways. And especially, I guess, when you're young and I guess not to imply I'm not young now, but when you're younger, especially in puberty and stuff like that, and you're not as good at like navigating your mental landscape, it really is easy to just sort of look at the stuff externally and not see how much you're projecting onto it and stuff like that, and how much of your personal struggles are causing you to sort of feel differently about different words that don't actually change your material reality.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a tradition or a story that helps you figure out the relationship or like what these signifiers are of man and woman? You've been talking about stereotypes, but where do those stereotypes come from in your mind? I guess just a amalgamation of TV and movies and stuff, or?
I think probably it is mostly media, because my parents aren't super, like, don't adhere super hard to gender roles. Like, my mom doesn't really wear makeup ever. I don't think I've ever seen my mom wear makeup. She just wears, like, a t-shirt and shorts most of the time. Like, she's really chill. And so I guess it's almost just that I perceived the whole outside world as containing all of that stuff. And that, you know, when I was going into the world, people were treating me differently than they were treating my male peers. Especially like when because I cut my hair in like at the end of middle school, and everybody just kept going, "Oh, you cut your beautiful hair," like, which is like code for, "Oh, you're ugly now."
Oh, okay.
Huh. And so it was just kind of a lot. And then it had taken a long time to get my mom to let me do that anyway, because she didn't want me to be bullied. And so I think it was just that growing up, like,
okay,
I saw femininity and femaleness as like a limitation.
Okay. But you also saw that masculinity is a limitation too.
Yes. So and so now I'm like destroy gender, but whatever.
Okay. How do you know if it's society imposing it on you, or are you projecting that society's imposing it on you? And how do you kind of like compromise and figure out what's where it's coming from, where's it going?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a thing I'm still figuring out. And I guess because it is sort of like, it is really hard to tell a lot of the time, because it's almost sort of like, I literally noticed the other night, I've been doing my best not to really focus on this stuff as much because I don't think it's probably healthy for me. But I noticed that like a male friend of mine would like make a way more eye contact and always be like turned more towards my male roommate than me when we were over at his house. And to be fair, like they have like a closer relationship than us and stuff like that. So it was just, it brought back that question in me, like, is this me being paranoid or am I noticing that? And either way, it doesn't really matter. That's the main thing that I'm kind of figuring out, is just a lot of the time it doesn't matter very much for me personally, as long as I'm doing my best to sort of unpack all of my stuff and then just do my thing regardless of how people are going to see me.
That it's such a interesting thing to be obsessed about, because it's really complex, and then it's made out of these fragments of, you know, I guess stories and then observations of like, how are people being treated differently all the time? And how do you know why they're being informed by that? And having the awareness that gender is this component of what it is to be a person, but how real is it? How much can you really make a self out of the building blocks that we call gender?
It's almost just like, because nobody actually fits really well into any box or anything like that. And so it's just like, it's almost like just the amount of fear that I had about it. And I guess that sort of hatred of my body combined with that, because I don't think it was all necessarily from outside of me, in that, like, I think there was stuff that I was probably going to be uncomfortable with anyway, because it's almost like my, you know, the way that I guess am a woman or whatever, just the way that I present myself is maybe different than what is the standard. So I think that was maybe going to be an issue either way for me, but like, it is just this very amorphous thing that it's hard to pin down. And it's like, how much of it is biological? How much of it is just learned behavior and stuff like that, and conditioning? Like, I don't know.
How have you made peace with being a woman? Does it start and end at the body? Is that like the principal aspect of what it is to be female?
The danger question. That's the thing, is like, for me, I am simply a woman incidentally, because I don't identify as one other than that I have decided to call myself one, because at this point in time, it causes me less distress. And that's, it's hard to explain to people. And there's a lot of like assumptions, I think, around how you should feel about things. But I don't know. I guess it's the kind of thing where I don't want to impose my own views on anybody else. But for me, it is just kind of like, I'm accepting what I was born with personally, because that's right for me. And like with womanhood, I don't particularly identify with it or anything like that. Or even like, cause it's such an abstract concept. It is just like, I'm a female person, I guess. So that doesn't have to matter for the rest of my life, unless it does, I guess.
Is when you said that you had an ego death last summer, when you woke up, when you landed, like, what did you land on? Like, what was, like, the, like, I'm assuming that ego death is, like, you're gone, and then you come back. Like, where did you, was that, is that accurate at all? Is that proper to even see that?
Sort of. I mean, I guess I only know my experience, so I don't know how it is for other people, but it was just kind of, like, this break, almost, this separation from everything in my mind that, like, that had built up for my whole life, like since birth, and everything that I thought was a part of me and stuff like that, that I conceptualized as just being an inherent part of myself, that suddenly I was looking at all of that stuff and seeing it separately. So it was like, like I wasn't there because I didn't exist in that moment, but I was perceiving it. So it was very weird. But yeah, it was just sort of that happened and I was like, holy crap. And then for like 2 weeks afterwards, I was like on a high, cause I was like, all this stuff that I didn't know how to sort through before, like, I see it now, I can do something about this. Like, and it gave me all this motivation to like do things and be like try and be the best version of myself and everything. Yeah. And I guess gender wasn't a focus for me after that happened. Like all of a sudden it just didn't matter.
Okay. What did matter then? What was the first thing you wanted to do? What was the thing that was you to do?
I guess the main thing was that I realized sort of the way that I thought about human value, not consciously, but just a bunch of these negative core beliefs, it was like really messed up. Like that I had sort of the intellectual belief that every person has value, everybody brings something different to the table and stuff like that. But for some reason, I wasn't a part of that, and I was horrible and should die. And that's how I had felt like for a long time.
Okay.
And because I knew it didn't make sense. And leading up to that point, it was almost because it wasn't, again, like a conscious thing. So I just was having this huge fight in my brain that I didn't even know that I was having at the time against like this immense self-hatred and like sort of disdain for the entire rest of the world versus this like hope and optimism that was like, I believe humans are good and I believe I can be good and stuff like that. So it was just like, the two wolves are fighting. And it was just so much cognitive dissonance, I think, that my brain was like,
huh. And then what?
I mean, I guess just I started meditating. That was the main thing that I was like, I gotta start meditating. And I guess like I started an exercise routine. I started drawing again every day because I had sort of that had dropped off when I got really depressed. I picked up a lot of stuff again that I really loved, and I started journaling and stuff like that. Like, okay, I have the tools in front of me now to figure this stuff out, so let's do it. Because I felt like it was kind of my responsibility, you know? Like, I had felt really guilty before about sort of being depressed all the time and trying really hard not to be, but then just inevitably feeling like I was dragging down everyone around me all the time. Mm. And so I think there's still some, like, lingering upset from that, where I do just sort of feel like a drain. So I'm trying not to use that as a motivation to be better. Like, just do it for the sake of being good for other people and stuff like that. And like being good for myself as well, I guess.
How does that map onto the transition detransition calendar?
That was, I think, June of 2019. And when that happened, I didn't take another testosterone shot after that.
Okay.
So that was just the end.
How long were you on testosterone?
It was over a period of, I think in my video I might have said I was 17. I just turned 18, so I messed that up. But yeah, so I was 20. So it was about 2 years.
Okay.
But there were some shots in the middle that I had missed because my appointment got messed up. So it was probably like 1.5, almost 2 years.
What's the adjustment of not having that as a part of your body?
So testosterone, at least for me, was like, it sort of changed the way that I felt a lot. I was almost more confident and more not driven necessarily, but it was like I was more impulsive in a way and more just like I had more energy almost. And now that sort of I'm going, because I did just quit cold turkey, which I would not recommend doing, that I was like, I did kind of crash, but then also I was still on this emotional high. So it was this weird, like, difference between my mental state and then, like, my body kind of feeling like crap. But I just didn't have a lot of energy and stuff like that. And so I guess that's also another motivation for me to be healthy and exercise and everything, because I feel like I have less energy now. And also, like, I couldn't cry on tea. That sucked. I like crying.
Can I ask you why? Just as a personal curiosity.
Crying is the best thing ever, dude. I love crying. It's like, you know, okay, so like, the best thing that I realized too was with this whole thing was that I have to feel my feelings. I can't just be like, I don't need you right now, go away, because that doesn't work. And so crying is this like, so, you know, if you do a meditation and you start crying during your meditation, it's like the most cathartic experience. It's like the best thing ever. Like, it kind of sucks in the moment, but then afterwards you're like, I'm refreshed. I feel like it's like, you know, you unclogged a gutter or something. Yeah. Like, stuff is actually flowing and you feel like a good, like, you know, you feel good. Huh. I don't know. I really like crying.
And did that, being connected with your feelings, did that extend to your body? And how, going off of testosterone, what's the transition of like just being in your body and being connected to your body, and how's that been?
So I'm still, it is sort of like a thing that I'm still working on. It's much better now than it was before. I have been, I guess, trying to ground myself by doing stuff like yoga, stuff like running, and just sort of looking at my body less as this thing to scrutinize and more of just like, this is the wonderful vehicle that has taken me through my life. Like, this is my friend, you know? Mm. And just sort of seeing it as the reality that it is just the body itself and not all the connotations that I would attach to it.
And it seems like you're pretty solitary. Did you have to change when you transitioned and detransitioned? Were there social aspects of that you had to go through, like stepping out of a community or dealing with the loss of friends, or did you undergo any of that?
My friends were pretty cool about it. At the end of 2018, I had lost like a lot of my friends from freshman year just because I was like, I don't fit with these people. And then I sort of had some like sort of acquaintances after that. I am generally like a quite a solitary person in general. But I had some friends, but I guess it wasn't really like I had a big group of friends for it to change, but I do have more friends now, I guess, just because I'm more comfortable with myself and I'm more comfortable socializing. So I do, you know, obviously now it's kind of difficult, but, I have not really had any problems with that. I guess people are just like, cool, like whatever works for you. Like, I'm glad you figured it out. And I'm like, nice. Thank you.
And I ask that in part because have been some detrans, young women specifically, the Peak Resilience Project, who were very active in the LGBT community. And you also did a video about, you know, some disagreements that you have with certain patterns of behavior within, I guess, certain parts of the LGBT community. So I was wondering if what aspect of that was helping you during transition, and was that community particularly informative for you, or a place that you went to for support?
Mm-hmm. I definitely viewed those spaces as like containing people that I presume to know, to sort of be like authorities on that topic almost, like, because I acknowledged that I was very young, I didn't really know a lot of stuff, and those people, I guess, seemed to know what they were talking about. So it was very much like I felt like I had guidance in some way, and I wasn't really super active in person in those kinds of groups. Like, we had a GSA at my high school, but there were not many people that attended. And I guess now it's like my college is very like, I guess, LGBT inclusive and stuff like that. And there's like a huge trans population, I think. Hmm. But I guess it is just sort of like kind of a live and let live sort of thing where I'm not outspoken about it enough that people really care. And I guess it's because I don't have like any, I'm not like, I hate you people or anything like that. I'm just like, this didn't work for me. This kind of hurt me more than it helped me, sort of a thing. And I think people generally respect that.
Have you been involved in D-trans communities since, like on Reddit? I know there's a pretty active community there.
Mm-hmm. It is like, I do kind of have to be careful how much I'm involved, because it is like a very emotional topic, and it is kind of like, if I put a lot of my energy into it, then I do notice it just sapping my energy.
Okay.
But I am in a group chat. I am like somewhat active on those subreddits. So yeah, it's like, it's nice not feeling super alone. That's something I was really scared of when I realized, because I didn't realize how much of a community there was until I posted my video. So, because I guess I saw it from the outside, but I wasn't really in it at that point. So, yeah, that's been very nice.
And do you have more time, energy? Thinking about gender, is that still a big part of your life? Do you feel like you freed up time to do other things instead of think about that? Or is it still something that it's you're getting a lot of meaning and trying to figure it out?
I mean, I guess it's now, like, because it is sort of something that I'm trying to figure out my relationship with, because for me personally, I'm just kind of like, I don't really care about my personal relationship to gender as much, because I'm like, I'm just going to be myself, whatever. But it was such a big part of my life. And I guess the fact that I experienced those things, and that when I had that ego death experience, I realized how common a lot of that was. And like, I am concerned that there are a lot of people like me that don't realize they're like me yet, because I was very sure that that transition was the right thing for me at the time, right? So it is almost like I am trying to kind of figure out how or if I can do anything to help in this situation. And that's sort of why I'm making my videos, is just like, may as well at least share my experience so that other people that are maybe dealing with the same thing can reach out to me.
What do you think, looking back on your teen years, what's some things that you would say if, like, you could have a conversation with that person? Like, what are some of the things that you think you needed to hear or be exposed to?
I would be like, trust your mom when she says that this is normal. That's the main thing. And I guess probably, like, don't spend that much time on the internet. Don't hold yourself away. Like, even if you're not that social of a person, which I'm not really, there's other stuff that you can do, like focus more on your art, stuff like that. And don't give so much attention to what other people think about you. That's probably the main thing. But I had so much focus on how other people perceived me, and it was not healthy at all.
What do you think you gained from doing that? That's not a zero sum. I'm sure you got some skills from being obsessed with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like, the contrast is insane, right? It's almost like, because all of my anxiety, because I am less so now, but like, I've always kind of been just like an anxious person. And so sort of the skills that I've learned to deal with that apply to all aspects of that. So it is almost just like, I learned how important my attention is, how important my focus is, because it is really important. And just sort of the way that, like, what you pay attention to, what you, like, construct in your mind or choose not to construct in your mind, how much that can impact just your experience of the world without actually changing anything out here.
Would you, if you were given the choice, would you rather not have a body, just be a mind thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to float. I don't know. I mean, there's cool things about having a body. I'm becoming more partial to the body thing over time.
It's taken some time. I mean, I experienced a long time where I just didn't want to have a body. I thought it was really stupid, slow, kind of lame.
Yeah. You get hurt. What's that about?
Yeah, I know. And then when you get hurt on an emotional level, like, the body just, like, reminds you of it. Like, here's your heart. Yeah. It's broken, remember? I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but...
Yeah.
Do you think that your generation is particular in that you've been given the internet from such a young age, and that's changed the relationship that you have to your body? Do you think that that's unique to how your mom grew up and other people before you?
Yeah, because I need to do more research on this, because I guess what I've read so far, it does seem to be that the more time you spend on the internet, like, it does change sort of the way that your brain works in some ways, and like, it does kind of encourage like this bodily dissociation. And so I got lucky enough, I wasn't really on the internet very much at all, except for like Club Penguin and stuff like that, until I was like 10 or 11 or so. And I don't want to sound all like technology is bad, Thomas Edison was a witch, but I am like slightly or somewhat, you know, worried about I guess the digital natives is what they call them, the kids that are growing up with iPads when they're like 4 years old. like, I don't know, we don't know how that's going to affect kids. So I hope it's okay. I don't know what to do about it.
You and people in your situation, or like your generation, probably my generation being Gen X, I have a memory of pre-internet. I don't know if you have a memory of pre-internet. I think the internet's been around.
It was pretty much already, was always there. It was there. Some capacity.
Email, AOL, yeah. Stuff like that. Now there's kids who are just like on it all the time. So yeah. We all have different amounts of wisdom and stories that we can be passing on to, like, you know, don't forget about the body. And do you think that, what are some of the things that help you to be okay with being in your body? Like I guess meditation's one thing. Like, is breathing important? Are there exercises that?
Yeah, breathing is a really big one. I do a lot of, because I try to meditate like roughly every day, and breathing's a really big part of that, right? Where it is just sort of, you feel your body as like, right, like you're just in it. It's not this thing that you speculate or this thing that you're like looking at or whatever. You're just in it. And it does, because it like calms the nervous system and stuff like that. It's good for everything. And then I do, you know, like yoga sort of combines the breathing thing as well. And then like running, it is just like I'm starting to appreciate what my body can do for me.
Oh, okay. It's like a trusted friend and useful ally.
Yes.
What are some of the media things that you want to end up producing? What kind of stuff do you want to make?
Oh boy, I keep changing my mind. For a long time, I wanted to go into game design, and then I realized that the industry sucks. and honestly, because I sort of am lucky in that my interests mean that, especially with video editing and stuff like that, I have sort of a normal job option. But at the same time, if that ends up being the direction I go, I want to also be producing my own stuff. So I would kind of, I've been interested in making like short films for a little while, just like short, like little animated shorts and stuff like that, or just like video art pieces that convey some sort of message that I'm thinking about and stuff like that. So, yeah.
How's that informed your recent YouTube game or adventure?
Well, it's been good practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, because I guess it's pretty basic. Like, I don't, like I know how to do a lot of stuff with Premiere, and so with my YouTube videos it is this like small aspect of that. But then it's also like, with that kind of thing, with media production, the human person is a big element in that and a big like asset. And so that's something that I'm trying to get comfortable with, because I do have a lot of I guess performance anxiety almost, and like, you know, it is kind of hard to be in front of a camera, but it's worth it for what you can do with it. So I'm sort of seeing how that develops.
Your videos don't, that stuff melts. I don't see that anxiety. You're very present. You're like,
thank God.
It's been interesting in my adventure, because I work with some people who have a hard time just melting through the camera, and like trying to get them into the headspace where forget that it's a camera. It's another person. You have to completely forget that. And you have no problem just like going right through the panes and the pixels.
Good. I always get worried that people can like see me shaking a little bit.
do you have any plans for this particular project or this channel that you're doing right now, the McKinsey story?
I keep changing what I want to talk about, because a lot of it is sort of like, I do have a lot of opinions about, I guess, the current social landscape around this stuff.
Okay.
But I've mainly been doing just a lot of journaling about it and trying to figure out how I feel, because I don't want to be like dogmatic. I don't want to be like imposing my views on people. Mm-hmm. I do just sort of want to be talking about, yo, this is my experience. Mm-hmm. And this is why, this is like how I think this stuff contributed. But at the same time, it's like, it is rough making these videos and being so involved, because it is just kind of that, I wonder sometimes if I'm holding myself back from actually being able to fully heal, and I don't want to be doing that. So okay. It's almost like every week I make a decision, am I going to keep going or not for now?
Okay.
So the algorithm isn't going to like me in the upcoming months.
You never know. You just don't know about that algorithm. What speaking generally, or as much personally as you want to, just so other people can, if they're feeling this too, like, what are some of the things that, when you talk about healing, like, what is it Like, what's something that you're healing or getting healthy about with? What's an aspect of that, if you don't mind?
I guess a lot of it, a lot of it is like the human value thing and sort of that inner voice that you have, and the way that you talk to yourself is really important. I had in one of my videos recommended getting the DBT workbook, which I would recommend for anyone.
What does that stand
because
for?
Dialectical behavior therapy, I think. I don't know what the dialectical means.
But
my therapist recommended it, and she was right.
What we're doing right now.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense, I guess. And so it is, I guess, just like, you don't think about how much that kind of changes the way that you feel all the time, just like the way that your thoughts impact how you feel, how you experience the world, and how you see yourself and other people, everything. Like, I guess for anybody watching, I would recommend meditating, and I would recommend not, you know, being careful not to treat yourself like crap. Like, treat yourself like you're a friend.
This is just a thought that's coming to me. I'm going to have to think about it a little bit more before it's in the place where I say that's my thought. But the way that we address ourselves isn't just in a pronoun. The way we address other people isn't just in a pronoun or in a name or in a gender. And I think that it could be the case that putting so much stress on, let's just say, the gender pronoun kind of gives us the subconscious thought that you can be contained in just that little block or that little box. But it's not just the way that you address yourself as a man or as a woman internally, or you identify as a man or a woman. It's you're in when the how you address yourself is the way that you relate to yourself as a human being. And if you try to limit the way that you address yourself in the full capacity, you're not going to allow yourself to really understand who you are, like, and really venture into all these different things that yourself is going to want to talk to yourself about, you know, like all that, all those emotions, all those complexities, and the things that don't really fit into these gender stereotypes, the things that don't fit into any level of the human experience. You need to be able to give yourself the ability to go in these different directions that yourself is in. And just rapping about that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. It's like the mask, like the constructed self. Like that then you...
Your PPE. Like
yeah. Like almost like your real self or whatever, or just like what you're actually feeling and experiencing, like, is limited by like your constructed self and what you call yourself, what you expect yourself to be and stuff like that. And so then it's not authentic.
Do you think of yourself, like, speaking of identity, do you think of yourself as an artist or do you have a vision of yourself in the future? Like who you're going to become, like auteur or like a label in that sense?
I guess it's sort of like, I just identify things that I'm drawn to.
Yeah. Okay.
And I guess that's mainly, it's like art, philosophy, writing, stuff like that. So I don't know what direction that's going to go in, but artist, philosopher, writer, let's go.
And you get two more years of undergrad left then?
Yeah.
Do you know if you'll end up doing a master's degree program? You think you'll just get into media and watch that go?
I think it depends. I really think it depends on how stuff shakes out. I want to hypothetically, but like, of course, like financially, that's a whole thing. And then with time and jobs, like I would like to, in theory.
Yeah. And with the economy. Well, do you have any quarantine tips for people out there? How have you stayed sane being locked inside?
You are allowed to take walks. Take walks. Don't just only, like, I wouldn't recommend that people only stay in their houses and don't get sunlight, because that's very bad for the human body. So maybe it's like really early in the morning if you don't want to, if you're in a crowded area or something, but like go for a walk, go for a run, you know, it doesn't have to be like, I think, a big thing, but I really feel like getting outside to some extent is really important right now.
Has your social life translated well to going on online? Were you already kind of there? Like,
I mean, I guess like my best friend is living with me.
Okay.
So
there you go.
Yeah, that, like, I'm not alone, I guess. So that's been my main social interaction. But yeah, I guess I've been just messaging my friends like, how are y'all doing? You okay? And they're like, Zoom classes are weird. And I'm like, yep, they sure are.
What is that like then? Do you think that, because I've been thinking that a lot of schools and professionals and businesses are going to see the usefulness of Zoom. So what's the limitation so far?
Limitation. I guess specifically for like art stuff, like there is a lot that, you know, the professors would be showing stuff in class and now they can technically screen share, but it's almost like with different things, I got lucky with, cause I have like media art stuff. And so it's more just screens, but for like my sculpture major friends, they can't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so it really is just like, it's almost distracting as well being at home. Like you're not like when I know, at least for me, when I go to a classroom, I'm in class mode.
Yeah.
And then when I'm at home, I'm in home mode. And so it's sort of weird trying to put class me into home me for Zoom.
Yeah. Like I recommended that everybody imagine that there's an elevator that you get into to go into the next room, like just like a 2-minute little passage. You're like, okay, now I'm in my office. Now I'm in my bedroom. Now I'm going to play a video game.
Yeah, like separate those spaces.
Separate the spaces or use time as pretended space to change the space around you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to release a video tomorrow. Are you going to do any more of these interview stuff? I know some people I want you to talk to. You should hang out with GNC Centric if you know of this.
Yeah, we're in a group chat together.
Okay, great. Yeah,
it's really cool.
Do you have an interest of doing that kind of stuff, discussion stuff? Do you think that that'll be?
Yeah, I really want to talk to people about it. I guess like I was really scared because this is the first thing like this that I've done. Really scared going into it, but I guess now I feel a little more confident because I didn't die. So, and you're very nice. Thank you for making this a good experience.
I've been the first for several people. So I enjoy that. Like, okay, let's put you in the kiddie pool and like, let's go out for a swim.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm definitely interested in that stuff. Yeah.
Cool. I'm so glad that I get to talk to you. Like I said, one of my very frequent guests was just amazed at your candor and intelligence and how much you're putting into your videos.
Oh, she's very cool too. I was looking at her Twitter and I was like, oh, this is relatable. Thanks. So I'll maybe relay to her like how valuable that's been for me. Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, so personally, like some of her resources.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Yeah. Like what specifically? So I could share that here.
I guess there was one thread she was talking about, like gifted kids and how, like this perpetual feeling of alienation and stuff, and like how gifted kids a lot of the time. Because I don't, it feels like ego strokey to call myself a gifted kid, but technically I always.
I'll say I think you're gifted.
Thanks.
You're fine.
but like always wanting those really deep connections and like that intimacy and stuff, but then never actually being able to get it, and then so becoming really like distressed and depressed and everything, and having that stuff actually be normal. Like I always just thought there was something wrong with me for my whole life. I just thought like I'm fucked up for some reason, but it was cool like seeing that there's a reason for that.
So you were internalizing your disappointment with the world. You're like, the world sucks, it's probably my fault.
I thought everything was my fault. Yeah. Very self-centered. Horrible.
I guess it's really difficult to get over ourselves.
Yeah. I guess this experience was a big thing for that, because it's like, now I'm wearing my biggest failure in my body this whole time. So,
what do you mean by
you
that?
Know?
Do you feel distressed about the changes that you've undergone medically?
It's kind of weird, because in a vacuum, no. Like, I didn't give myself reverse dysphoria or anything like that. But I guess it's weird because it does, like people aren't expecting the voice. People are like, oh, what the heck? So it is just, like, I have a normal level of social anxiety as a base. And then so talking to new people with my voice, like, people ask questions, and then it's like, oh, here's all this emotional, like, baggage that comes up to my brain, like, oh, I did this to myself because blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, like I don't tell people that, but like that's what comes up in my brain. And it is just kind of that sadness of like, I was an okay singer before and I really liked to sing and now I can't really sing anymore. And that was just my voice. Like I was given that voice. It was unique to me. And I changed it. And I guess it's like, I have already grieved about that with my therapist and everything. It's not, I'm not super broken up about it, but like, yeah, it is, it's a little rocky.
Okay. Thanks for opening up about that. I had no thoughts about your voice. I enjoy your voice.
Thank you.
Are you able to, this sounds a little, I don't want to be insensitive, but.
That's okay.
Are you able to like figure out how to get this voice to work for you in a singing capacity? Is there?
I mean, it's hard to figure out right now because I am in like an apartment complex, so I don't want to just be singing and have my neighbors be like, "Can you shut up?"
Fair enough. No karaoke, yeah. I guess, unless there's just apartment karaoke at 6 p.m. on a Sunday, you know?
Yeah, because it is like I'll sometimes. Like sometimes in the evenings or whatever, after I eat dinner, I've made sort of like a habit of singing like one song every few days or something, just so that it's, cause it feels nice, right? It's this very, you know, nice thing, but it is like my range is messed up. Like, cause it's almost like it feels like my throat wasn't built like wasn't built for vocal cords of this size. Oh, and now my throat hurts a lot. Because, and it tends to hurt after I talk for any significant period of time, like when it didn't before, I think because there's some sort of friction there, or maybe not friction, but like the vibration, I can't tell. I'm not sure. I'm not like a vocal scientist, but there's like some discomfort with that. So it is like limiting, but I can probably make it work.
I never thought about that. Like you're giving yourself kind of a Adam's apple, but your neck is still a female neck, you know? Structurally, right? So I never thought about that.
Yeah.
And the thing that the doctors should probably warn their patients about.
Yeah, I didn't think about that at all.
Was it easy for you to get on testosterone?
Yeah, I went to an informed consent clinic because I did get diagnosed with gender dysphoria. I should mention that after the 2 years. But yeah, I just went to Planned Parenthood, and then I think it was like 2 appointments or something, maybe 3. But yeah, I think it was like 2 appointments that then they were like, all right, we'll do your first shot and then send you on your way. And I was like, all right, cool. And I haven't followed up with them, so I don't know where they think I went. But I'm thinking maybe I should follow up and just be like, yo, here's the sitch.
Yeah,
That's probably a good thing to do. I didn't think about that until now for some reason.
I was just speaking, before we spoke, I was speaking to a researcher on this, and she's saying that there's really difficult numbers with D-trans people because they don't report.
Hard. Yeah. Like I want to do my part. I just thought about this because there is that one study, where isn't it some specific clinic where it's like it was either the only clinic in that country or area or something, or one of the only ones. And so then it was like the rate of detransition that was reported was like between 0.8 and 0.4 or something like that. But then like 40% of people just didn't respond back. Mm-hmm. So I don't think all 40% of those people necessarily are transitioners, but like that's a huge range of possibility. Like we don't have very good data on this right now. Mm-hmm. So I really, that's a main thing that I want is like better studies on this, cause we don't have that information right now.
Okay. Okay. And do you think that you would have, it's hard now because you did get diagnosed with gender dysphoria. Would you want more, either gatekeeping or options presented?
That's another thing that I'm trying to figure out, because again, I guess a lot of that is based on like what evidence we have, which in my opinion isn't really adequate for me to make any super good judgments. But like, I definitely think, because when I had, you know, when I went to therapy, I didn't really get much help with gender dysphoria. I didn't come out of it with very many skills that were helping me deal with it any more than I had going into it. So I think that's the big thing, is that I think there should be more resources in therapy for people like to be able to figure it out on their own. And that should be like the recommended thing. You should probably go to therapy first and figure it out, even just so that, you know, if you do transition, you can still, like, it doesn't make your dysphoria go away. That's what I've talked to like a bunch of, like, you know, happy transition people about, is that like it still doesn't make your dysphoria go away. Mm-hmm. So it's just good either way to learn how to deal with it for yourself in whatever capacity you can. So that's my main thing.
Hmm. Yeah, we're at a new era. There's a lot of decisions being made, and I guess just making the data as we go along. But at some point, we should get that data down. Well, good luck. Hope you get your grades.
Thanks.
Hope you go viral again.
Good luck with your corona stuff.
Yeah.
How are you, by the way? I didn't ask you that. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm fine. I don't have corona. I'm in Washington State, so we're shut down right now. No corona here, but I guess they say that 70% of people will eventually get it. That's the last thing I heard, but there's so much information out there. Unless there's a vaccine that comes out. And there was rumors of a vaccine yesterday, but So just playing it chill, taking my walk, forcing myself to go on walks. And
yeah, that's the best thing we can do, I think.
Walk it off, America.
Yeah.
Congratulations for reaching the end of the podcast. If you enjoyed this product, consider donating to this channel via paypal.me/Benjamin Boyce or joining me on Patreon. Also follow me on Twitter @Benjamin A. Boyce. Have a good night.